practical matters. So what I'm going to do is we are going to run about an hour till we are caught up again with our schedule. So there are some things that we are not going to get to today. I'm just going to let you know that up front. And then we will have a special called Planning Committee meeting Wednesday, I believe. We're going to try to do it on Wednesday. But what I'm going to do is I know there are some folks here who want to make some comments during the public comment period. So we're going to go through that. I would just ask that you make the comments brief and to the point so that we can get through as much of the agenda as possible, because our special meeting will likewise have a public comment period. So if you would, and you'll be eligible or able to speak then as well. If we don't, but we are going to take all the public comments in their entirety now. So with that, I'm looking for an approval of the minutes from the March 4th meeting.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve for approval of the minutes of March 4th, 2019 Planning Committee meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Next is public comments. And for those who want to make a public comment, if you would come up to the podium and give your name and address, and you can have 2 minutes, but if you can do it in less, I'd appreciate it. Okay, and we'll just start over here. Ma'am, if you would give your name and address, please.
Hi, my name is Karen Bryant, and my address is 1105 North Shadow Drive. I'm an Airbnb host, and I enjoy working.
Hello? Okay. Hi, I'm Karen Bryant of 1105 North Shadow Drive. I am an Airbnb host and have enjoyed the extra income. It helps supplement my husband and my retirement income. We are both healthy and our insurance premiums are now over $11,000, so this helps supplement that. We put our little guest cottage on Airbnb as a test during the eclipse of 2017. We've been pleasantly surprised to have over 79 guests since then. Our guests seem to be in the early 30s that wish to visit Charleston and cannot afford upwards of $100 a night at typical hotel accommodations. They just want a clean bed and a shower. Hospitality tax is already collected on these visits. We chose our neighborhood because there is no HOA and because we do not want bureaucracy dictating our property rights. If you do charge a fee to approve the accommodations, do you not have to do the same with any rental property, whether it's short or long term? What difference does it make? Is it income for the landlord, one short or one long term? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Up next, who would like to speak? George? Or? Okay, Lori.
Thank you, committee, and thank you for your hard work. My name is Laurie Bixler, 144 3rd Avenue. I'll be brief. I'd like to compliment you on your common sense new regulations. I do have to, unfortunately, comment about the prior speaker, which I didn't intend to. Mount Pleasant, you are not getting your hospitality tax from Airbnb. I can't say it enough. I've been saying it for 9 years. Okay, there's 3% left on the table, or 4%. I'd have to look back. We need you to put into a plan into effect so that the money that's supposed to go to you, which Airbnb leaves on the table, goes to the county as I do, and most people don't, so you get your proportion, because this is a large degree about money, and I'm available to help you review that. I'm also just briefly commenting, would you go over the complaint process? Because if somebody has a lousy neighbor, one lousy neighbor can take one property down without any recourse. And that's about it. I won't be here Wednesday. Is this going to be Wednesday's topic? Or are we going to get to it?
If we get to it today, it won't be. We'll place up everything on Wednesday. But
I know you're going to miss me on Wednesday.
I will.
Are you going to be able to do this without me?
Lori, I'll try.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. George?
Yes, my name is George Bixler, 144 3rd Avenue, Mount Pleasant.
I just have a copy here of the draft for these new rules and regulations, and I think they're outstanding. We've come a long way from when we began this hall. I remember 9 years ago standing before certainly Joe and talking about doing away with this completely, and I thought, wait a minute, you know, there's a lot of money on the table with taxation and permits and all the fees that we pay to the city and contribute on that side of it. One thing that I pointed out here and picked up on was there's a 1% limitation of short-term rentals related to the entire population. Shouldn't it be per area, per street, per market, for development? Because you could have, in your area, you could have 10 short-term rentals. You don't want that. I think it should be more specific. Can we zero in on that? Thank you. That's all my complaining. Goodbye.
Thank you, George. Yes, ma'am. If you would give your name and address, please.
Michelle Whitbeck, 712 Hibbins Grant Boulevard. Thank you for listening to those of us who opposed many of the regulations that were being proposed in the previous months on short-term rentals. We really appreciate your time. And I especially appreciate you not regulating townhomes so strictly. That would have affected me directly. And not incorporating a spacing rule. Also appreciate not having such laborious fire regulations. I am in agreement with having a business license. However, I'm not in agreement so much on the cost of the permit fee that I'm reading about right now. The $400 for a permit seems exorbitant, especially since no inspections, from what I'm reading, will be required. We pay the state only $50 for a retail license to be set up, so that's quite a difference. Anyways, I look forward to hearing your comments today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am, can we give your name and address, please?
My name is Tina Librand. I'm at 2154 Country Manor Drive in Water's Edge. And we have a home in our neighborhood that is multiple rooms being rented out short term. Each room is locked, accessed by lock, short term. The building permits have not been obtained to turn a four-bedroom into a six-bedroom home, multiple turnover. I've talked to Kathy about it, and I just need, we need your help with this house. I can give you the address. But anyway, there's just multiple violations, and we've called the police. The police have been there, but we have a very bad problem on Country Manor.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
One house is a very bad problem.
Someone else like to? Okay.
Lori just twisted my arm. Mary Ricosi, I'm at 615 Bay Tree Court, and I'm really, really very pleased with how things have progressed and come along. I read the draft. The only thing that I can see is Lucy made a good point to me about trying to keep it local and maybe putting something in there that states that you have to have one of your residences in Charleston County if you're doing this. That would maybe help us to keep these companies that are coming in and taking over from, you know, getting a foothold in the door. I know right now it doesn't seem like it's that much of a concern, but from what she has said in her area, it's already starting, and that's not something that I even as a short-term rental owner can see helping our town. So short and sweet.
Thank you very much. Give your name and address, please.
Hi, my name is Kenny Kraft, 204 Spooner Lane. I also want to applaud the efforts. I think common sense and kind of retracting and keeping things simple has been a positive improvement. Really kind of probably down to some smaller nitpicky things I thought comment about. Just looking really specifically at the language, one thing that just sort of caught my attention, this parking, the mention of parking says, at least one additional off-street parking space shall be required for every bedroom rented on a short-term basis. I get the idea of wanting to provide more parking, but it seems pretty extreme to think that, you know, a three-bedroom house that gets you know, zoning approval to have one space or two spaces would, you know, be extrapolated to think that just because there's more bedrooms, it would make that many more cars. You know, generally, somebody's coming to stay, you think they would, they might just be, you know, coming on vacation and riding together with family or something. Anyway, at a minimum, you know, it makes it seem like additional spaces if there's two required by zoning, that all of a sudden you'd have to have like five parking spaces for a three-bedroom house. It seems like the language is really, really skewed there. That was, you know, I also might agree that the fee, the kind of seems a little exorbitant, especially compared to the state only having the $50 requirement. That, you know, obviously trying to use this as an opportunity to raise money for the town is a fair and reasonable thing, but maybe a little high. Also, I don't know, is there a provision in here that talks about the, like, kind of how a grandfathering would work for people that are already doing it? So that has been maintained. So, but anyway, all in all, appreciate the efforts that have been made and listening to the public. Thank you.
You're certainly welcome. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, thank you. Melissa Black, 920 Center Street. And I just wanted to say thank you. It was really good to look at that, what you came up with. I know that took a lot of time and thought and effort, and I appreciate that. The only thing that I was concerned about, somebody mentioned, one of you last time, was about the concentration all being in one area, and I think eventually as the town grows and new developments are not allowing it, that it will just completely turn a neighborhood over, which is not what any of us want. So that 1% maybe could be in all the old areas like you were talking about. So I just thought maybe we could, I didn't see anything added there. And I also felt like the tax too, you know, the $400 to me was fine, but yeah, I think you'd even get more if you had a town tax on short-term rentals, and everybody else does it. So, but I appreciate all that you did. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Is there any?
Hey, Jackie Line, 908 North Shim Drive. The only thing I want to disagree with is George. Sorry, George. I have a room in my house that I rent, and then my in-laws, who both have Parkinson's, purchased a house opposite me, which we rent out about 7 months of the year. So I'd like the ability to still continue to do that, if I may. So thank you.
Thank you very much. It's fine.
Afternoon. My name is Trey Tezza. I'm part of the school board as well as on an HOA board that is impacted by some of these decisions. Not speaking on behalf of either of them, but to give some background in where my process comes from. As an older family, being in the Charleston area, times change. You know, it's an impact on housing pricing. It's an impact on lifestyle changes. For my family and I, most recently, at the youngest levels, it's buying a home. Sorry, my address currently at 164 Heritage Circle. It's a small townhome, and the goal is in the future that we can continue to rent it out as we move on to our next size home, also within the district. Additionally, coming from Sullivan's Island, who has some of the most strict laws, anyone might be aware, it causes some challenges on the homeownership and what happens in the future. For my grandparents, for example, they aged out of the point that they could come as regularly as they wanted. They couldn't live in the house full time, unfortunately. It became a vacation spot just for our family. But again, knowing that those kinds of changes are impacted in the future that are hard to plan for now, I'd encourage you to make sure that the rights of the homeowners are just kept somewhat flexible to encourage them to stay involved in the town long term. That being said, we predominantly cater to people who are not short-term, so 28-day minimums. That being said, we've had a lot of success, but I think that, again, just making sure that the youngest or the least financially successful can compete in a town and make it their home and have a plan for staying in the district long-term would be really appreciated by myself, my son, and my family. So thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Susie Smith, 1317 Erkman Drive.
And I'm come here speaking as a homeowner for myself and some of my neighbors who all have these rental properties, some of them being used as rental properties, some of them not necessarily right now, but would like to retain the right to be able to use them. They provide additional income for us. We certainly are not opposed to having to provide parking space or off-street parking for them, and that's a very reasonable request. We are not open to the idea of additional taxes. We already pay property tax on our properties, and we should be able to retain the right to do what we would like to do on our own properties. A business license is certainly an acceptable solution to generate some more income for the town. And if there is the accommodation tax already being collected by Airbnb, but you're not getting that, then I think that's something that needs to be looked into with Airbnb as opposed to trying to get more from the individual homeowner themselves. Our property values are increasing around here. I am also a realtor in the area, and I do have to tell you that more and more of my clients are looking for properties that have the second income properties on the in their backyard to begin with. So it's an ever more popular way to have a second stream of income around the world, not just here in Mount Pleasant. And I think it would be silly of us to try to make it so strict that people would not be able to do that. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much. Is there any?
Hi, Alicia Lockwood, 316 Lapwing Lane, and I'm also pleased with the fact that we're making progress because I, like a lot of these people, live on my Social Security, and it's very significant to being able to maintain my home and a quality lifestyle. I'm pleased with your rules. I just have to say that when I was here last meeting, there was a discussion on restricting building permits for hotels or something. And I'm going like, this doesn't have to be hard, and you don't have to do it today. Generally, I think less is better. You can add on if there's a need. But when you make a whole bunch of rules before you know if they're necessary or appropriate, you may be causing more harm than you intended. And you can always restrict things as this is on an annual basis. If you find there are issues, deal with it then. You'll have opportunities down the road to restrict permits, cut it, whatever. But I think going too far over now will only come back to bite you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you, Pat. Yes, sir, if you just give us your name and address in a couple of minutes.
Okay. Thank you. I'm John Clark, 521 Pelzer Drive. Little background. I just recently closed on my home. It was my parents' home for the last 45 years. I bought my two sisters out in order to undertake short-term rental at the property. This is my first meeting for one of these issues. I've been focused on getting ready to pull the trigger on this. I don't know, it's maybe been mentioned before, the 1%, I mean, how close are we? Are we, you know, three more STRs and then we're there? Or, I mean, what are the total number of houses versus the existing number of STRs? I mean, how much room is there? And what happens when that 1% cap is met? Are only new STRs allowed by attrition or what? So that was a question I had. The local agent or owner, are there, it sounded like there was only one available, whether it's the owner or an agent. It appears that if we're held to the 60 minute rule to get to the unit, I couldn't even go to the zoo in Columbia and make it back in time. So, I mean, is there an alternate list? Can you give several? I mean, I'm not going to leave my property unsupervised or unmanaged, but just was a little curious as to what that what flexibility there was, if there were, you know, you put yourself plus two or three alternates so that you can make sure that things are covered. I guess the other thing were the referenced summaries that you're requesting be posted with regard to trash, noise, golf carts, et cetera. Do those already exist? Are those under construction now with the town? So that's, like I say, I'm planning on renting it short term and living in the house. So that is my retirement plan. My body can't take construction anymore, and I'm hoping to stay in the family home.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else short-term rental?
Patrick?
I'll be quick.
Okay.
Yeah, but you go ahead.
I'm on a different topic.
She's trying to move on.
Well,
different topic.
Yeah. Sorry.
Patrick Arnold, 25 Beverly Road. Just wanted to say, after reviewing it, that this is a good ordinance. It seems to be a fair balance of what we have been talking about, and most importantly, looks very enforceable compared to the other models that we've looked at in other cities. So I want to say hats off to staff for going through this. I know that was not an easy job. Only thing that we would be concerned with would be the restrictions on townhouses and apartments as they relate to being different from people with homes. But other than that, this seems like something that the town can very much take into account and make a very enforceable ordinance for the city. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick.
Your short-term rent? Go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Greg Heffron. I live at 1252 Dearsley Court. The way I see it, I'm just like you guys. I love my town, and I love my family, and I'm a lifelong resident of Mount Pleasant. I don't know how long all of you have lived here. I'm 57 years old, and I moved here when I was 7. I've lived in Parrish Place basically my whole life. The way I see it, Airbnb has been a way, not only for me, but for other members here today, to supplement their income. And I commend you guys, number one, for trying to tackle this, as some view as a problem. My question is, have y'all done a cost analysis? For example, Joe, if one of your relatives wanted to rent my house for a week and I charge them $1,000, with these new regulations, what did that $1,000 cost me? I'm having a hard time wrapping my brain around all these fees and taxes associated. And so I'm curious, do you know the answer to that question? Could you tell me if I rented my house for $1,000, what that's going to cost me?
We're just receiving public comment.
Okay,
we're
I can't ask a question.
Because that'll use up your time.
All right. Well, one last question. I'm assuming that y'all did a cost analysis as to what it's going to cost the town to regulate these expenditures. Is the fire department going to have to come out and inspect my home to make sure that it's in compliant? No. Are your police officers going to have to come by my house and go inside and see if I have these regulations posted on my wall? Are you going to hire additional staff full-time on an annual salary to maintain these regulations? Those are just some of my questions. And I know I wasn't here during your first meeting. I know apparently y'all have been working a long time.
I think you'll find those questions have been addressed. Thank you for your comments.
Are those answers offered somewhere?
Yeah, if you read the ordinance, I think most of them will be answered. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Jeff.
Alex.
Hi. My name's Alex Graham.
I live at 1321 Bellevue Drive in Mount Pleasant. Been pleased to live here with my wife since, 23 years? I was in Mount Pleasant, actually spent some summers here at the Citadel, back in the day when there was one red light and one grocery store and one policeman. Joe, you probably remember those days. I'm a little older than you, but and speaking of age, let me tell you a little bit about myself. My background is commercial real estate. I've been a realtor in South Carolina, owned a real estate company off and on since, well, for 40 years. I'm now in another business, and my wife and I are doing the Airbnb, and it has been a wonderful experience, really has. And it helps us pay our mortgage, our taxes, and our insurance. We've met wonderful folks. We limit it to two people. And I frankly do not know how we would get by if we didn't have this extra source of income in a part of the house we were never using. It was two rooms that were on the far end of the house that we opened up for people who were family and missionaries and people that would come into the area for free. But unfortunately, family didn't come enough. So we've discovered this other source of income, and it has really been a wonderful thing for us. So two things I want to note. This is just my commercial real estate background coming out a little bit. While I was sitting here, I did a quick search, and I went to your website in Mount Pleasant for demographics for 2017. And it shows that in Mount Pleasant, there are currently 32,000 plus home units, and 1% of that would be about 3,000. Interestingly enough, 28% of those are tenant occupied or rented. So 28% of the homes are that way, with 71% being owner occupied. For those who are owner occupied units, part of the 71%, for us to have one or two people stay in our home, it's really not a burden at all from a neighborhood. You know, Joe, I've got a big corner lot with a potential to park at least 12 or 15 cars there.
Alex, could you wrap that's up? It. Yeah, because that's your time.
Okay, thank you for all y'all are doing and will do.
Thank you, Alex. Is there anyone to speak on short-term rentals? Okay, Pat.
Okay. My comments are on item 6A, and I gave y'all a map showing the areas. It's three different properties that happen to be next to a property that has 1713 on it on Halls Pond Road. In February, you all did not, you voted against annexing this property so that they could go to AB2 zoning. Now, these three properties that are marked in kind of pinkish orange want to do the same thing. They're in the county. They have trailers on the property. I don't know where they are on paying their taxes, but I'm asking y'all to vote no on annexation, to go from residential in the county to AB2 in the town of Mount Pleasant. No on annexation and no on AB's.
Now, which one were you? That was 6A?
I don't think it was.
No,
6B. Okay.
6B.
That's okay. Thank you. Yep, got it. Right. Okay, is there anyone else who would like to make use of the time for public comment? Okay. With that being done, employee years of service recognition.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
We're going to skip this one in the interest of time, and we're going to do it in May.
Okay.
We'll still recognize him, though.
Very good. We have technology. Okay, budget review.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, quickly, if you have your budget books, it's page 34 under the planning tab. In short, the salary line items cover the items I had mentioned at prior meetings, a 4% on average pay for performance, 1% mandatory retirement increase. There's a new position, a development code inspector, being requested. Other notable expenses under contractual services, we have, you know, we're pulling back from the expenses we needed for the comprehensive plan and adding $50,000 for special area plans that have been asked for as part of the comprehensive plan, if approved, as well as another $50,000 for taking a crack at rewriting our zoning code, which frankly needs to be done. We're continuing with the Shim Creek project that you know of. On the capital side, where we are proposing to replace one vehicle, and we have some capital improvements towards ADA requirements and towards bike and ped. And that is the summary. Happy to answer any questions.
All righty. Does anyone have any questions of Eric? Okay, with that, we'll need a motion to recommend that to town council for approval.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to recommend approval to to the budget committee for the planning department's budget. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. I'm looking here for to see some that we may need to go ahead and do it and others to delay because of the, for the interest of time. Okay, let's go ahead with 5A annexations.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Can you hear me now? This is a request to annex 1197 Porsche Bluff Road. It's about 2 acres of land. The comprehensive plan recommends community conservation, and so it would be designated with the CC, Community Conservation Zoning District, and it has an existing single-family residence on it. So here's the location here. Across from Oakland on Porsche's Bluff, again, designated community conservation, you see in crosshatch unincorporated Charleston County properties.
And I'm sorry, I've kind of lost the property here.
It's almost in the center, surrounded by just a Billy Swales.
Oh, okay, got it.
Oh, I forget.
Okay.
It is there.
Okay, got it.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion to approve the annexation.
Second.
Have a motion and a second to recommend approval of annexation. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Item number six is, for the interest of time, is going to be pushed to the Wednesday meeting.
So that would be 6A?
6A, that's correct. Do we need a motion for that, or can we just defer that, Eric?
It can be tabled until the next meeting.
Okay. We're going to table that till the next meeting. Okay. 6B, 1724 Lacannon Lane and 1729 Halls Pond Road.
Yes, sir. This includes 3 items and requests, an annexation, a comprehensive plan amendment, and a zoning request. After the Planning Commission meeting last week, the applicant requested to withdraw the rezoning request to AB2. Their intent is to come back with an AB request. So at this point, you don't have to consider any of these items and could defer all of the annexation and plan amendment until the zoning case, the new zoning request, catches up.
Okay. Okay, we'll table that one until that comes as well. All right, 6C.
That's part of it.
Oh, is it? Oh, it's C and D?
It was B and
D. It's B and C and D.
B and C, okay. All right, so that puts us at D.
This is a request to annex and zone property at 2237 North Highway 17. You see it located here, just north of the, this is now the Home Depot, and showing old photo with the school. It's this piece of property here, which is part of this larger tract of land, adjacent, immediately adjacent to it, and you'd know it as Richards. Their request would be to annex and zone the property AB2, and it would be combined and ultimately redeveloped in conjunction with the other use that's on the larger tract. And the Planning Commission recommended approval of the zoning request.
Move to approve.
Second.
Have a motion and a second to recommend annexation of Richards into the town of Mount Pleasant. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Bar and Grill.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Boy, will miracles ever cease, huh?
All things must pass.
Okay. E, Echo. Request the zone.
That was E.
Oh, okay.
6F is a set of text amendments which continue our work.
Stand by. Okay. Yeah. I got caught up in the moment. Do we have a motion for zoning?
So moved.
Second. Okay. Motion is second. All those in favor of recommend approval of zoning, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. All right.
So the next one, the next agenda item relates to a series of amendments as we continue to work on our single family residential development program. If you recall, we've been making headway here in terms of dealing with single family development, tree removal, drainage, and trying to come up with mechanisms that will streamline and improve this process. So this consists of three different text changes, and in terms of summary here, the first one deals with replacement trees, and it would make a change that the requirement would be that any tree replacement would have to come from a class, the same class of tree type as we already have today. So you would stay, our ordinance specifies various classes, and you couldn't use an inferior class of tree to replace one that's higher on the classification scheme. So that's the first one. The other one is a provision that's already in our ordinance, and it dates back, and it goes to a 2000 the date is in 2000, and it deals with separating properties that were either created before 2000 or created after, and causes considerable difficulty for the staff to enforce, a lot of time trying to figure out how do we apply these regulations, and it makes a difference whether it's before this date or after this date. And so what we recommend here are further changes to collapse that into one treatment, and that staff would be able to administer removal of historic trees as they normally would, and then the applicant would instead have the ability to appeal any staff decision to BOZA rather than having to go to the Board of Zoning Appeals. And then the third one deals with clarifying how one gets to either replace trees or pay into our tree bank. And oftentimes this doesn't happen till the very end, and then we have lots of discussions and site visits and trying to figure out which tree and can I replace and now do I have room to do the tree replacement. This would simplify it and allow somebody to designate whether or not they wish to replace and mitigate a tree removal on site or simply pay into the tree bank itself.
Whose discretion is it whether the cut the tree down and...
It would be theirs. I mean, staff would review and approve whether the tree would be removed. So that's taken care of. And then the mitigation aspect, whether I have to replace or pay into the tree bank, that's left to the homeowner or property owner to be able to make that determination.
Okay, but the original removal of the tree is staff.
Staff.
Okay, because I don't think we want to make it too easy. Somebody say, yeah, I'll just contribute to the tree bank and we're on our way.
That's already covered as we would administer the ordinance. This would be just dealing with the mitigation side.
Okay. Bob, you had a question?
Yeah, that's the sticking point I have with this. I mean, we just spent a year talking about modifying the tree ordinance to require some more creative siting and perhaps keeping more trees on property, and I'm just concerned the way that's written is that folks can perhaps plan for a building that is larger than they can accommodate with the trees there, but then realize, well, that's okay because we can always write a check for to mitigate. And I don't know, is there a stronger way to do that that really makes paying into the tree bank a last resort as opposed to we're just going to count on having that tree removed and then just writing a check for it? That to me just sounds like we're putting too much flexibility on the builder to take out trees as long as I can write a check for it. And those who can't afford it, you know, don't get that option. So I don't know. I'm not really comfortable with that last piece there. I just would like it to be written in a different way that really makes the preservation of trees primary. And if that can absolutely not be done, then the tree bank option is there.
Their staff might be able to help me. Who's Kevin? Mr. Mitchell?
Yes, we're the mitigation...
Kevin.
Good evening. We're not changing the actual mitigation requirements. It's still 1.5 times. So that would be the incentive to actually planning on site versus paying in the tree bank. So it's still more out of pocket by paying into a tree bank than it would be to plant the tree. So if it's a cost situation, then it would behoove the person to plan on site. So that's...
I'm just concerned that it would have more of an impact on a single family owner who's trying to do something on their property as opposed to maybe a tract developer or a large developer who could write the check easily. But maybe someone who has just a single lot who's trying to do something there, they may not have, they might financially hit them harder than it would a big developer. So
This is applicable to the single lot.
Right.
So it's less for the major developer originally doing the subdivision. Now I've moved to the individual lot construction. The developer would have addressed this during their subdivision review. This now takes it right down to that parcel, and when push comes to shove and trying to site a structure and then protect trees and do the drainage and all of those. So you're dealing with individual lot owners as opposed to developers in this case.
Right.
Yeah, that's an important distinction between the two. The Planning Commission up to the subdivision request will deal with trees as normal. This is the homeowner wanting a building permit, and then you're dealing with directly with the homeowner about a particular tree, which will have about 4 criteria to determine whether or not the tree gets removed. And staff could reject the request, and then they have an option to appeal to BOSA at that time.
Okay. I'm not terribly comfortable with this today, so I'll probably vote no. But, Kevin, I'll give you the next 8 days to convince me otherwise before the council meeting.
Yes, sir.
So, Bob, here's what I'm thinking about as you're talking, and I don't know if I'm right or whatever, but I think it all goes back to the goals. So, for example, if we wanted our community to have, you know, a certain percentage of trees and all this other stuff, if the tree bank is doing what we would like the tree bank to do, maybe in some cases the money we would get from the tree bank may be able to, with that one tree being gone from just a residential lot, not commercial, maybe we can accomplish the goals of the green program that we're trying to do, maybe even a little bit better with a whole bunch of money. If we knew every year we could say, here, we're going to plant here, we're going to plant here, we're going to plant there. I'm not saying all the time it could work, but if we knew that we were going to get this much money in our budget from those trees and it could help us accomplish our goals, which we have not talked about yet, then I think it might be able to work maybe.
Yeah, I think that's valid. I think my concern is Many of the trees that are being taken down, though, have been here a long time. And it's good to go back and replant trees, but you're replanting 4-inch trees when you might be taking out a 16-inch tree or a 10-inch tree. And so it's not equal. And I'd rather us try to keep some of our older trees that are in good shape. But, Tom, you're right. There's tree bank is a good option. I just don't want it to be an option that's so easily gone to before we look at every other opportunity to save a tree. That's all.
I think, as I said before, I don't want to make it too easy to just cut trees down and then replace them. Can we forward a recommendation for 1 and 2 and then bring 3 back?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll make that motion.
Okay. And the recommendation for 1 and 2 is approval?
Approval.
Okay. We have a...
I'll second that.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to forward to full council a recommendation of approval for 1 and 2, and we're going to hold 3. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Okay.
Thank you.
1 and 2. And 3 you'll bring back?
I'm back.
Yes, sir.
Raj. Okay, next.
6G is another text amendment dealing with buffer yard requirements. And one of the things that we run into is that we believe that the intent of the buffering for townhome-type development, multifamily development, intended that the buffer would be a perimeter buffer around the entire project. And we often end up debating whether or not it requires buffers between buildings on the same development site. So this proposal would make it clear that the buffer required for these kinds of developments would be a exterior perimeter of the property, as you see in the bottom here, and would not apply inside between separate building pods, if you will, within, say, a townhome development. Planning Commission recommended approval of this one unanimously.
Move to approve.
Second.
Have a motion and a second to recommend approval of full council. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? All right. Okay, can we go with H?
6H also relates to trees as they deal with residential developments. And this is adding language. It would be within our it's essentially a cleanup, and it would be putting language within the zoning code and within our land development regulations, which would require when street trees are planted. Certain PDs and certain kinds of developments have requirements for street trees, but we've never really incorporated sort of the standards or requirements for that. And so this set of provisions would do that, spelling out then the value of street trees, the kind of street, so you'd have to have a minimum right-of-way of 60 feet for that classification of roadway, the planting area between pavement or curb or sidewalk to the center of the planted tree shall be 5 feet. So it's trying to create sufficient space for the tree to be able to grow, incorporate root barriers, to make sure that the future root damage to sidewalks and other infrastructure don't occur, and that it's the responsibility of the developer to be able to coordinate provision of street trees with utility providers. And this, too, was recommended for approval by the Planning Commission.
Palmetto trees and everything been planted on Coleman. Are we anywhere close to that, or? Because I don't think we are close to it. I don't want to pass something that, you know, we don't.
They're almost entirely palmettos, so their root system won't threaten the roadway.
Okay, that's what this is designed to do.
This is for subdivisions that, where they're planting maybe oak trees or other species that may
root. Okay.
Yeah, grow into the street system.
Okay, I just didn't want to put us in violation of something. Okay. All right.
Just one question for Mr. Alma. Jeff, has Jody looked at this, and is this sufficient, because since he's the one that has to repair infrastructure here. Does he feel like this is sufficient to protect drainage pipes and such?
We did discuss this with Public Services. Okay. I'm not sure about the exact final language, but we can verify that as we move to council next week.
Okay, great.
And there is a concern about maintaining those facilities.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve.
And I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion to approve and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Okay, we have run out of time, and I apologize to everyone who came here for the rest of the agenda. We're going to have a special called Planning Committee meeting to accommodate the rest of the agenda. We simply can't do it today. And as I said, I apologize for everyone who came today to go into those other issues. Yes, sir.
Can I say one thing? But you are the king. A lot of the short-term rental people are here. And selfishly, I'm not going to be here Wednesday. I don't think it's going to be a long, long discussion by,
I agree.
And I can't speak for you, but there's been a lot of work done on this. They're here, and it might not take a long time. And if we can at least take a shot at it and see if we can do that.
I tell you what, let's take, see if we, 10 minutes, you think we can? Kind of whittle through the list in 10 minutes?
If I can get some of the answers that I have here, then sure, we can do it.
All right, I take it back. We're going to try to work through short-term rentals and then save the rest for the special council meeting.
Okay. Well, I'll be short. So.
Okay.
Just a recap, this is February 2019 short-term rental helper report. There were 345 units. This is the report we just received from March. There were 350 units, so it went up five. And just there was a comment made a minute ago about dwelling units. I think we have approximately 40,000, so 1% cap. We're at about 350 now.
Okay.
So based on last month's discussion, y'all received a draft with some strike through on what we got rid of. Some of this is the same, but I just kept some of the main elements. Creates one process for all types of short-term rentals, whether it's a whole house, a room in the house, or which is now considered a bed and breakfast, or whether it's an ADU that's received the proper permits. We did, in working with Chief Mixon, decide that the fire safety requirements, that was really the bare bones of what they would do. And so the next best thing was to go back to that affidavit that we originally had. We kind of went back and forth internally with staff on whether perhaps if you had a whole house rental, we would keep that safety requirement inspection, and perhaps if you had a room in your house, we would just do the affidavit. But in working with Chief Mixon, we're thinking start with the affidavit, see how that works, and then if we need to come back and implement some a more stringent inspection where our fire inspectors actually go out and look, then we can always come back and do that. We did write in a requirement to require general liability insurance. The business license, that's going to be the same. Right now you can have up to four without a business license, and the language says just one will require that. You did want to keep the 1% cap, but get rid of the street segment requirement, and so the cap is still in there at 1%. It does prohibit the use of a structure as a short-term rental that does not meet the definition of a dwelling unit. We also added some language that prohibits short-term rental activity within any zoning district or neighborhood that does not allow it. So that kind of puts the onus back on HOAs where there's covenants and restrictions that prohibit this. And then also, based on our last meeting, we changed the language regarding townhouses needing to be owner-occupied, and multifamily units are outright prohibited from operating a short-term rental. And then we do establish the parking requirement. I think that's an important component. Right now, if you're residential, you're only required to have one parking space per residence. This is one additional. So we thought that was reasonable. And that's all I have, unless you have questions. Real quickly, though, we do have, there was just to address some comments that were made. The grandfathering, it's, people are probably a little bit confused. It's not called grandfathering. It's called nonconformities. We already have a section in our ordinance that deals with that, so that'll be a component of this. Our finance department, I think a couple previous meetings ago, we did look at what was going to be required. We have to look at enforcing this ordinance and then the short-term rental helper software that we have bought into. And so our finance department did come up with some numbers based on because one of the desires was for this to be sustainable. And so that's sort of where those permit fees came from, and those have been maintained based on that that exercise we went through for the finances. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Yeah,
it's the program has always been thought to be self-sustaining.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay.
Bob, you have questions?
Do you want to start?
I have one comment. It'll be short. And I'm prepared to vote. But, you know, so we had how many people line up, and they all kind of said the same thing. They said, oh, well, this is really good. Thank you. But so that's okay. We're not getting 100% of this. Everybody's not going to do cartwheels out of that room. But we have to make the decision. And I think what we have, based on a lot of good work, is something that's pretty darn close. And it's not like we can't change anything later if it becomes a huge problem. I think putting this off and putting this off and putting this off is not a great thing to do. And I appreciate the work of this committee, because this is hard. And it's been done all around here, and I think we've done a really good job of getting it as close as we possibly can. So that's my comment, and I'm prepared to vote today for it.
All right, so first I want to start off and just say welcome to all my friends who've been visiting me every month for the last, you know, you're like family. So I did come here today prepared to put a bow on this and get it moving one way or the other. But I do have some questions I want to get clarity on. I guess the primary thing for me was I didn't notice anything in here that talks about short-term rentals being allowed on a person's 4% property only. It looks like the way it's written is that anyone who owns any property can do short-term rental. Is that correct?
I believe so. I know I received a call from the Charleston County Assessor's Office recently, and it was emphasized that if you rent your home more than 72 days, then it is assessed at 6%. I don't know if we – if Melinda's here.
Do we do that, or does the county do that?
That's the county.
So that's the county's
right
thing to deal with. Okay.
Because that was one of the things that was discussed as a way to sort of keep the industry from taking over here and buying a lot of investment properties and using them as short-term rentals. So I think that is probably something we need to include in here, certainly allowing people who have this as their primary residence to let them do that. But if it's not your 4% property, then you can still rent it out. It just has to be 30 days or more, but not be short-term. So I think we need to have some control there to keep that from being overrun by investors. So let's see here. We've talked about the fees. In no time. Okay, so we're looking at Section 3D. At no time shall the maximum number of STR dwellings exceed more than 1% of the entire dwelling units. I'm going to propose that we strike that. Only because I think that will concentrate STRs in certain areas of town more than just allowing it to be across the town. So much of our town is regulated by HOAs who have the authority to refuse STRs altogether. So if those neighborhoods stop STRs, what you're going to see then is the bulk of the rest of them being concentrated in the other areas, which I'm hearing from folks who don't live in HOA neighborhoods. They don't want that concentration there. They want it to be more spread around the town. So I don't know what the 1% really gets us, to be honest. But
if you do that, won't you have the exact same thing? I mean, if you let's say you take it away and the HOAs shut it down, you're going to have, at the end of the day, the major this one area that could be a lot of them. I think I think the intent on the 1% was good.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the intent was good. I agree with you in how it's going to eventually work out, but if we just do away with it, I think it's just going to happen anyway.
Yeah, my fear is that the 1% will all be, you know, if we do away with that, what will happen is anything above that 1% is all going to wind up in the old part of town.
Right.
And you know, maybe 0.5% would be better.
Well, then maybe what I would recommend is that we strike it from here, and then as we revise this, and if that becomes the reality, then we can pick a part of town to the limit. But I don't know. It's not a big deal, but I think that would cause more concentration to have 1% in there. But it sounds like you guys are...
If it's not a big deal, I think we should leave the 1% and then reevaluate it in a year or two after we see how this thing's going to shake out, maybe.
Okay. Under prohibitions, Michelle, paragraph C, hosting of events such as weddings, parties, and similar gatherings consisting of more than the maximum overnight occupancy of each rental dwelling,
mm-hmm.
so not exceed 2 persons per bedroom. Can you clarify that for me, what we're talking about? We talk about hosting an event and...
Bachelor parties, bachelorette parties, things like that. The intent is that you wouldn't have overnight more than what's allowed anyway, which is 2 persons per bedroom plus 2 additional per rental dwelling are prohibited. So the point of it was to prohibit parties by limiting the number per bedroom.
So it's not the hosting the problem. Hosting's not the problem. It's the people who stay overnight after the party. Is that what the issue is?
It could be both, but...
Because it seems like that's sort of out of place in this ordinance if we're talking about just hosting a big party. People have graduation parties and things like that, and I'm not sure what that has to do with
I'm sorry. For this, it would be more the overnight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe we can clear that up a little bit.
Okay.
It kind of sounds like hosting a party is against the ordinance. So. Let's see. So multifamily dwellings. Did I understand you here that says multifamily places that are zoned multifamily cannot do short-term rental?
Yeah, that's what I took from last committee meeting.
Okay. So in, under multifamily dwellings here, it says the STR of individual multifamily dwelling units subject to a long-term lease is prohibited.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be prohibited regardless because it's in the multifamily area?
Well, it's covered here, and it's covered through the zoning. If it's in a zoning district that prohibits it, or an HOA that prohibits it, so it's kind of covered twofold.
Can I have clarification on that,
please? I'm trying to get clarification myself. So, So let's say we have an apartment complex, and they're struggling. What prevents them from taking one of those buildings, putting all those apartments on the short-term lease, and using that for short-term rental?
Well, being zoned multifamily would do it.
Okay.
If we prohibit it in the multifamily district.
Would you have multifamily dwelling units in a district that's not zoned multifamily?
Well, we do. So that's where it's covered in the multifamily dwelling units, and it's covered in the zoning district.
So what would stop those units then from deciding, hey, you know what, we can make a lot more money if we just make them all short-term rentals, put them all on a 29-day or less lease?
I'm not sure I follow.
Well, let's say we've got an apartment complex that's got 5 buildings,
mm-hmm.
and they're struggling, and each building might have, let's say, 20 units or whatever. And they figure out, you know, we lease these out by month or by 6-month leases, but, you know, we could take all these units and turn them over every night, like a hotel, and make more money. What in here prevents them from doing that?
The multifamily.
What if we're not in multifamily zoning, though?
Well, but they're a multifamily dwelling unit, so Kent and I worked on this. I feel like the definition covers both. Yes.
Yeah. Because this talks about long-term leases. That's what's kind of getting me here. Is if they change the long-term lease to a short-term, you know, 1-week lease, couldn't they do short-term rentals in those units then?
Kent Prowser of the Planning Department. I think the way we wrote it was that you wouldn't be allowed to do it in the multifamily zoning district classification.
Right.
So if you have an apartment, you can't rent it as a short-term rental.
Okay. So then this paragraph I'm reading then, wouldn't that become moot then?
Which paragraph is that?
Multifamily dwelling units.
Is that there?
No.
There. He's talking about this.
I'm not really sure. Maybe that was a part that should have come out. What we had before, given the back and forth on this, whether they're going to be allowed in townhouses or whether they're going to be allowed in multifamily, we kept getting conflicting information. One meeting, yes. The other meeting, no. We had it in here at one point in time so that if you lived in a townhouse, you could rent out a portion of your townhouse. You just couldn't own a townhouse and rent it out separately. The same thing with a multifamily dwelling unit. If it was under a long-term lease and you were the leaseholder who lived there, you could rent out a portion of it on a short-term basis. I think this is just a holdover from that. I don't really, you know, the business of whatever kind of lease you have would be irrelevant. I mean, you could conceivably have a multifamily unit with no lease whatsoever. But it's just you can't use a multifamily dwelling unit as a short-term rental. So really, I believe is where we are right now.
That paragraph can really come out because it's prohibited anyway, regardless.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hopefully that got clarification that you're looking for. All right, hold on. Moving down, there's also – now, we're talking about here notifications, and here was a question. For the purposes of determining the total number of notifications to the owner regarding violations, written warnings and violations occurring within a single rental contract period should be considered one instance. So if I understand what I'm reading, if somebody is on a 29-day contract for a short-term rental and the police have to be called out to that unit three times a week for noise and trash over the 29 days, that counts as one violation?
Yes. The first you turn into a... Yeah, I believe so.
I mean, I can see if someone's staying there one or two nights, that's an issue. But if they're staying, if they can stay up to 29 days and constantly be violating that whole time, I'm wondering if we shouldn't have something else to hold that owner accountable more times than just once.
Should be cumulative.
I'm sorry? Okay.
Now, again, the danger of that is you could have a neighbor who's got an axe to grind and call the cops every night on you, and you could be violated and lose your business license within. So there needs to be some protection built into that, I guess, but I just want to make sure that we're not allowing someone to be there for almost a month violating and the owner gets dinged one time. It seems.
Well, the police and the fire department, when they go there, or the code enforcement, when they go there, they'll be able to see if there's enough to prove that there was an actual violation.
Yeah. So. Okay. So maybe we can work on that piece, strengthen that up a little bit. And with those changes, you know, I'm more than happy to vote today to move this forward to council. Again, there's two readings on it, so, you know,
we have to go to Planning Commission for a public hearing.
Okay. So there's plenty of opportunity here to fine-tune this as we go forward, but...
All right.
I'd like to make a motion that with those comments, that we approve this and move it forward.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to recommend approval with comments that were made and for the staff then to take it to Planning Commission. Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.